In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Monday, September 13th, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of the program, we'll take a look at the Quadrennial Defense Review report from the QDR Independent Panel, and you'll hear from former Defense Secretary William Perry and former National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley talking about the Independent Panel's report to the Senate Armed Services Committee. That's hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hour number one today is my latest in-depth conversation titled Who Will Do It? Defining Inherently Governmental. My guests on the program today, Barbara Atkin, Deputy General Counsel of the National Treasury Employees Union, who's worked on the union's efforts when it comes to inherently governmental. Barbara, it's great to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Francis.
Al Berman is President of Jefferson Solutions, former Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, and Al, of course, wrote the original memo defining inherently governmental in 1992. Al, nice to see you again. Great
Thank
to
you,
have
Francis.
You.
Nice to be here.
And Angela Stiles is a partner at Crowell & Mooring and author of OMB Circular A76, which detailed the Bush administration's competitive sourcing initiative in the early part of that administration. Angela, nice to see you. Thanks
Thank
for being
you.
On again.
Thank you for having me here.
It's great to have all of you here today. Al, we'll start with you because as the original author of the first memo about inherently governmental, talk about the genesis of that, why you went there in the first place.
A lot of the issues we're seeing today were we were seeing the same kinds of concerns about 20 years ago. There were concerns by particularly members of Congress. I know Senator Pryor in particular was concerned about whether or not agencies were actually doing their own business properly or were they relying too much on the private sector and contractors for getting jobs done that really should be done by public servants. And so that was one of the prime movers in getting me to look at the question. And then when we started getting these issues raised, there wasn't really any document there that pulled all of this together. And so when agencies were trying to respond to criticisms or concerns, we needed to see if there was some way to put something together to give them some help in dealing with the
And why you? Why the OFPP administrator?
Because as a procurement administrator, and of course Angela's a former procurement administrator as well, our responsibilities are addressing policy issues relating to people doing business with the federal government. Mm-hmm. So that's the overall responsibility that we have.
Barbara Atkin of NTEU, the union's been following this issue, obviously, since Al first started writing about it, and even before that, people talking about this issue. Does it look the same to you, the landscape of the inherently governmental conversation? Does the landscape look the same today as it did when Al first wrote about it back then?
Well, there have been some interesting changes. Perhaps with the political winds, the definition of what is inherently governmental and the impetus toward outsourcing or contracting out has come and gone. We've seen that over the years, there was at one point, perhaps in the early 2003, there was actually pretty much a presumption that work was commercial, mm-hmm. unless it was established that it was inherently governmental. Now it seems to be going back the other way. In March 2010, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, we call it OFPP,
mm-hmm. yes.
Seems to be reversing that presumption. Mm-hmm. And now the idea is that the work that the government does is inherently governmental unless there's been some showing that the work is commercial. We think that is the correct presumption, and so that we think that it's better to put the burden on the agencies to show that the work should be is appropriately contracted out.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the agencies are doing at dealing with that change as manifested by OFPP?
Well, we haven't seen it. That actually, this new change is not yet in effect, and we haven't seen attempts to apply it. There currently is in effect a moratorium on new contracting out mm-hmm. because Congress felt that agencies needed some time to reassess, to reevaluate the contracts that they'd actually already let, mm-hmm. whatever the official word is there, and to assess whether there was inappropriate contracting out, and to try to bring back in-house work that is inherently governmental. So right now they're engaged in a process of reevaluating whether they had gone too far, as we believe that in many instances they had, and they're trying to bring the reassess it and bring work back in-house.
I want to talk about some of the examples that you have cited, and I know Colleen Kelly, the president of NTU, has been on this show and a number of other shows on Federal News Radio talking in particular about situations at the IRS, and we'll get into those later in the program. Angela Stiles, Barbara mentioned the political winds that have shifted from time to time, and one of those I imagine she was referring to was your A76 memo. What's your view about, and she also mentioned the pendulum swing, where people who are observing the inherently governmental conversation have this perception, or the conversation seems to be framed that one administration, the pendulum's way over here to the right, and then another administration comes in and it swings way over to the left. And is it your view that that's fair, or is it possible that the pendulum swing is maybe closer to the middle and maybe more finely tuned than it seems to
folks? I don't think that's fair at all. I would say that the most significant outsourcing efforts really began at the Department of Defense in the Clinton administration that really took on the hard questions of, is this the type of work that our civilian and military forces should be doing, or can contractors move the tents and feed our soldiers, and can we come up with a better solution together and manage it better for the taxpayer as well as a better result for our troops?
Mm-hmm. I guess that leads us to the point which is really at the root of this, is deciding what is and what isn't, and how we do that. When you started this conversation way back when, Al, how did you sit down and, I mean, did you take a master list of what everybody did and say yes or no, or how did we start?
At first, Francis, what we tried to do was to say, is there some kind of philosophical underpinning that you could state that says this is what we're thinking, as a way to describe for people how they should interpret an activity and whether it should be done by government or done by the private sector. And generally, that statement has pretty much stayed the same, and in fact it's in law now under the Federal Activities Inventory Reform Act, and it says an inherently governmental function is so intimately related to the public interest as to require performance by government employees.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice statement, but then the question is, well, what does that actually mean? And so then the second order issue was taking that general statement and finding out what are the kinds of activities then that you would place in that category, and setting budget priorities, making policy, making war. I mean, there's a whole series of things that are quite obviously governmental,
mm-hmm.
contracting, awarding contracts. But then there's a whole host of other activities where you get somebody who's providing you advice, providing the government advice or assistance, that, while not inherently governmental, can lead to the decision maker making a decision that is, in fact, governmental. And so those were the issues that we were trying to deal with in putting some lists together.
Mm-hmm. Can there be a master list, do you think, Barbara? Can there be something that folks can agree on all sides of this, all the stakeholders, and then no matter who's in charge, no matter who the secretary of the agency is or who's the president or whatever, we can stick to that list, do you think?
Well, I'd like to say yes, but I'm afraid, to be perfectly honest, I don't see how we can come up with a list that everybody is going to agree on. The OMB documents that have been promulgated to date attempt to come up with illustrative examples,
mm-hmm.
and it's relatively easy to decide what is inherently governmental at the extremes. You know, what is obviously inherently governmental?
Sure. I mean,
one of the examples they give in the list is command of the military. Well, yes, certainly it is.
Right. That's kind of a duh.
Yeah, right, exactly. But you get into more of a battleground when you get slightly away from the top figures in charge of government policy. And I'm sure the three of us could have a very interesting debate on how far down the spectrum you go before you get away from what is quintessentially governmental work to what the new proposed policy letter calls closely associated with government work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our view is that closely associated should be rolled into inherently governmental.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect I might have people on this panel who disagree with me on that. But I would say that Clearly, those who hire and manage federal employees, those who interpret and execute the laws, determine agency policy, establish the budget, collect taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I do work for the National Treasury Employees Union, so I would mention collect taxes.
Uh-huh.
Oversee the acquisition function, conduct foreign relations. Those are all inherently governmental tasks. Maybe somebody else would like to.
But I'm not sure you can really define it for all time or even a couple of years, because our citizens and even our relationship with our government changes all the time. So take baggage screeners. You know, prior to September 11th, we all thought it was okay for baggage screeners to be contractor employees.
Mm-hmm.
After September 11th, you know, we as a nation decided that it would be important for those to be federal employees that are doing that, because you can have more control over that. And in every situation, I think it can change and it can evolve over time. What about the training of the Afghan National Police Force? You know, we have contractors that do that right now. You know, is that something that government employees should be doing? And that might change based upon our political views, based upon our international relations with different countries. So it is so evolving and changing over time that I think it's almost impossible, even in what might be a clear. So you put commanding the military in a clear category. Well, is training the Afghan National Police, is that commanding the military?
Yes.
And so, but that's, you know, that's really, but that's where you get into a question. So I'll agree the Secretary of Defense would be an inherently governmental function if you're going to define it that way. But below that, I think it's, there's so many different factors that change and evolve over time based upon different politics, based upon the different situation our country's in.
All right. You have a sense, I think, if you're listening to the conversation, that you see where the negotiation is heading. And we'll continue that with Barbara Atkin of NTEU, Al Berman of Jefferson Solutions, former OFPP administrator, and Angela Stiles of Crowell and Mooring, when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends? But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology, at Kaiser Permanente, we found some better uses, like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments, not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the Internet was intended? Maybe, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Fossil fuel power plants generate about two-thirds of the world's electricity and are expected to continue to play an important role in the years ahead. But increasing energy demands worldwide means there'll be a need to better monitor power plants for signs of age and inefficiency. While stricter emission requirements will demand higher levels of performance and efficiency, the U.S. Department of Energy is about to fund five projects that will develop technologically sophisticated integrated monitoring networks for advanced fossil energy power system. The projects will study new ways to develop and validate models of the networks and the wireless self-powered sensors used for advanced next-generation power systems. $6.5 million will be invested in the projects, with nearly $5 million from the Energy Department.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorbeck Insider this afternoon. You know about auctions, eBay, for example. Well, this afternoon, we're going to tell you about a reverse auction and how one agency using them to create an open and transparent contracting process. And the TSP L Fund. You set it and forget it. The first L Fund, L2010, riding into the sunset. So what happens now? We'll tell you this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorbeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation called Who Will Do It? Defining Inherently Governmental, and my guests on the program today, Barbara Atkin of NTEU, Al Berman of Jefferson Solutions, and Angela Stiles of Crowell & Mooring, and all of them experts on the concept of inherently governmental. Barbara, before the break, we were talking about the difference between inherently governmental and closely associated, and getting into individual examples of what is or isn't or should or shouldn't be defined as inherently governmental. One example of that that NTEU has been particularly active and outspoken on was the period of time when the IRS was using contractors to collect debts from taxpayers who hadn't paid them for a long period of time. Talk about the original situation there briefly, and then the result of that. And obviously, it's a program that's been ended.
Yes. Well, tax collection, I think people would agree, is a quintessential example of inherently governmental work. But nevertheless, in 2004, Congress passed a statute that gave the Secretary of the Treasury the discretion to initiate some outsourcing to private debt collectors. And it was an unmitigated disaster. Let me tell you how it worked. It cost $80 million to set up this program. And it brought in its short-lived, miserable history, $60 million in net revenues for IRS. And contractors were paid by commission.
Mm-hmm.
They got $13 million in commissions during this brief period it was in operation. But under the contract, they were entitled to up to 24% of the money they brought in. And at one point, I find this astounding, but it is true, there were 65 IRS employees who were required to oversee the work of 75 contractors to make sure they got it right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was far more cost-effective, as we were pointing out over and over again, to do the work in-house. What we calculated was that if IRS employees did the work, the government would get $31 for every dollar spent
mm-hmm.
on those IRS employees. But the return on investment when the work was done by contractors was $3 for every dollar spent. Now, this doesn't even touch on the issues such as failure to safeguard the confidentiality of taxpayer information, or the use of abusive collection techniques, calling at night, bugging people, mm-hmm. Harassing them, things that IRS employees are not allowed by law to do.
Right. But the private contractors aren't allowed to do it either.
That
doesn't mean they didn't do it. Fair enough. But they have the same restrictions there under the Fair Credit Reporting Act.
In theory, they were subject to the same restrictions, but it was very hard to keep them to that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they did not, by statute, have the ability to use all of the IRS tools to help taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
They were given the easy cases, and even then they didn't have the ability to mitigate penalties, that sort of thing, that IRS employees have. So in March of 2009, IRS finally shut down the program.
All right, let's use this as an example, as kind of the defining line that we've talked about before. When we come back from the break, my guests are Angela Stiles of Crowell & Mooring, Alan Berman of Jefferson Solutions, and Barbara Atkin of the National Treasury Employees Union, discussing the concept of inherently governmental on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. A reminder, in hour number two, you'll hear about the Quadrennial Defense Review from former Defense Secretary William Perry and former National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Traders are breathing a sigh of relief that new global banking rules would not mean a rush to raise billions of dollars in extra capital. The proposed rules will require banks to have 7% of money set aside for a rainy day. Right now, they only have to have 2% set aside, but they'll have until the year 2018 to meet the deadline. The Dow's up 37 points, the Nasdaq higher by 30. Some corporate deal-making in the news today. Hewlett-Packard is buying security software provider ArcSight for $1.5 billion. And Dollar Thrifty has accepted Hertz's acquisition offer. The airline industry isn't doing too well in the on-time department. More flights were later in July than a year previous. Hawaiian Airlines had the best record that month, while ExpressJet came in as the most tardy. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
I just opened my third doggy daycare. My business is growing by leaps and bounds. My marketing is deluxe.
I'm hiring drivers for my shuttle service. My business is picking up. My marketing is deluxe.
I care for 52 lawns. My business is growing. My marketing is deluxe.
See how Deluxe for Business helps 4 million small businesses grow. Deluxe for Business.
Deluxe for my business.
For my business.
For my business.
Deluxe for Business. Visit deluxe.com/marketing.
Like a lot of people, Marlo Scott wanted to do things differently. So she created her own business and made ink from Jace her business card.
I was doing the corporate grind until I opened my cupcake wine and beer bar, Sweet Revenge. I love ink. I get rewards on every purchase. It has twice the acceptance worldwide as American Express. And free ink cards if I need them for my employees.
Make your mark with ink. Go to jace.com/ink. Jace what matters.
Acceptance rates based on global, not domestic data. Restrictions apply. Ink cards issued by Chase Bank USA and subject to credit approval. Copyright 2010. J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. All rights reserved.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
What is the Federal Aviation Administration's information technology strategy? How is the FAA enhancing its IT governance and program management? And what about FAA's Next Generation Initiative? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these and other questions with Dave Bowen, Assistant Administrator for Information Services and Chief Information Officer at the Federal Aviation Administration. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour. Today's Emergency Preparedness Series is brought to you by the D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency.
Police say one reason no employees at the Discovery Channel were hurt when a gunman took hostages is because the office building had a disaster plan. Employees knew what to do, where to go, and how to get information. Now's the time to ask if your office building is that well prepared. One thing to ask, do your local police and fire departments have access to the floor plans of your office building? The answer could save your life. I'm Mark Seagraves.
Did you know that floods are the number one natural disaster in America? The D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency wants to help you prepare now for the flood risks that come with hurricanes, tropical storms, and other severe summer weather. Learn the difference between a flood watch and a flood warning. Gather supplies for your storm kit and create a family emergency plan. To learn more about preparing for floods, including information on flood insurance, visit 72hours.dc.gov. Be ready, D.C.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Rob Carey is the outgoing Department of Navy CIO. He says he is well prepared for his next assignment with the Fleet Cyber Command.
The lexicon used by the Clinger-Cohen Act defining IMIT and the lexicon used to define cyberspace by DepSecDef and others, NIST, are virtually the same thing, and I believe that. So I don't believe that there's this dramatic difference between the two worlds. As a matter of fact, I think they're an 80 or 90% over.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Plan now to attend Affirm and GuyTech's September 16th Educational Forum on Data Center Optimization. You'll learn from government peers how to optimize federal data centers by effectively managing organizational change. Affirm's September event will be held downtown at the Hamilton Crown Plaza Hotel at 14th and K Street, Northwest, from 11:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Register today at affirm.org. That's affirm.org.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation, Who Will Do It? Defining Inherently Governmental with Al Berman of Jefferson Solutions, Barbara Atkin of the National Treasury Employees Union, and Angela Stiles of Crowell and Mooring. And thanks again to all of you for being here. It's hard to believe we're halfway done already, and the time goes so quickly. And I appreciate your time in being here today. We talked, Barbara, before the break about your example about the debt collection at the IRS, and that's been one of the, I think, top of mind examples over the last couple of years about what is or isn't or should or shouldn't be inherently governmental. There are a lot of questions surrounding the program there. The way Barbara described it, it didn't sound particularly effective or well serving to the taxpayer. As you look at a program like that or those particular duties, Al, I'll start with you. How do you parse that? How do you look at the responsibilities that the contractor was performing in this particular instance, that is interacting with taxpayers and collecting the revenue that's due the government? And I'm not asking you to make the case one way or the other, but how do you construct a case where you decide one way or the other?
I think that you have to go back to the basic question, Francis, which is, in those circumstances, can you ensure that the public interest is being served and that there aren't other kinds of interests that are coming to play in doing that activity?
Mm-hmm.
Can you ensure that the government has sufficient oversight and control to make sure that they're getting the results they're looking for? And clearly, from a cost-effectiveness standpoint, is there some variance in terms of abilities that the government has that the private sector doesn't have to make something a lot cheaper because government people can do it? I mean, you'd have to look at a variety of these kinds of factors and then make a judgment as to whether you want to do it or not. But I think that those are the kinds of decision, that's the kind of decision tree you need to go through.
Yeah. Angela, when you go back to 2004 and we look at Congress's mandate on this originally, according to the projections, the numbers were not going to come out the way that Barbara talked about the numbers coming out. The projections and the plans and so on were much more favorable to the taxpayer than the reality that we got. Is there a way, I mean, maybe the planning was done wrong. And I'm sure, I imagine in hindsight, if Congress knew, if they knew then what they know now, this might not have happened. How do you account for that?
Well, a lot of times congressional micromanagement just isn't good. I don't know that they can always understand an agency and how an agency might be able to formulate something to effectively, in this instance, collect taxes. So, and the more Congress micromanages, the less flexibility the agency is going to have in making that decision. An agency needs flexibility to say, gosh, you know, we might have the right mix. What can the private sector here do that's appropriate? What can the public sector do? And how can we bring those two together to collect more taxes more effectively? And maybe if you leave it in the hands of the agency, they can come up with a better decision and better manage a contractor, give them appropriate duties, and make sure that it's working correctly.
And now, my recollection on this, another reason I find this instance interesting, is because my recollection is that the IRS didn't ask Congress for this. This was mandated to them. Congress said, you'll do it this way. And so, Angela, to your point, in this case, the IRS thought they were doing just fine without it. And probably would have preferred to continue on the track they were on.
Right, and maybe they needed a push in the direction of there's more that the private sector can do. The private sector collects accounts receivable every day, and they keep their customers while they do it. So they certainly know how to collect debt really well. How do you take what the private sector does and use it at the IRS in an effective way? So should there have been a push from Congress? Probably. Is it micromanaged too much? Probably so, and that can lead to, you know, an unsuccessful program when people in Congress decide how a particular agency should be managed.
I think, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to point out, however, that IRS employees by law are required to keep confidential all taxpayer return information. I mean, this is the number one right that is pounded into every IRS employee's head, thou shalt not disclose taxpayer information. This is not necessarily the case with
I think that's a really faulty argument, because we have contractors with the highest level of security clearance in our nation doing very complicated research, building weapons, all kinds of things, and we trust them. We trust them with our secrets. So to say that they can't have taxpayer, you know, information, I think is not a valid argument.
Well, let me respond to that by pointing to a GAO report I read about this morning in our news clips, that GAO was reporting on the difficulty making sure that the contractors don't disclose various forms of confidential information. That this is the oversight has been a problem.
But the same with federal employees, too. I think there's the same problems with the federal employees in terms of the confidential
information. Not the IRS employees and tax return information. That is sacrosanct.
Angela's point, I think, is an interesting one. How do you use what the private sector does well in the federal space? She's right. Companies collect accounts receivable every single day. What's appropriate for somebody to come in? These accounts that the private contractors were given were accounts that had been delinquent, I believe, for at least a year.
They were given the low-hanging fruit. They were given the very easy cases of, you know, debts that were acknowledged to be due and owing.
Yes.
And they still managed to mangle the
But they
the
were
collection.
Also, that's true. They were, there was no question about whether the debts were due the government or not, but they were, these cases, if I recall correctly, were all cases that no action had been taken on by the IRS for at least, I believe it was a year. Is that right?
I'm afraid I don't know.
Okay.
That.
So, with that period of time involved, you do figure that if somebody's dodged their taxes for, I know it was a long period of time. I don't know that it was exactly 365 days. What would be, do you think, a fair use, if any, of somebody, of a contracting company, not necessarily those that did this work for the IRS, but what would be a good way for somebody to either learn, come in and teach the IRS some best practices from the private sector? Is there room there at all, do you think?
I'm afraid I don't see it. I'm trying to find some common ground with you here, and I'm afraid I don't see it, because it's been our experience, and it's been proven over and over and over again, that federal employees, when they have the proper tools and the resources, do the work of the federal government better than anybody else. And I wanted to point out that they're not motivated by this profit motive that is going to be found in the private sector.
The commission
they're motivated
factor
by
that
the
you
public
mentioned,
interest. Yeah. And they have they're concerned with doing the work to protect the public interest, and that's the overarching goal that they have.
Mm-hmm. But there's been a long-standing policy. I mean, back in 1955, there's a Bureau of Budget circular that said that the government shouldn't be in the process of being in competition with the commercial activities of the private sector. So there's another whole question that you need to look at, and that is, what is being done? Is it commercial? Mm-hmm. Is it something that's out there in the private sector? Does the private sector do it well? Because you would want the government to reserve its responsibilities for things that the government should do, and not necessarily to compete with those people that do this other kind of thing.
But I think Barbara's point that collecting the revenue of the federal government, I think you can make a pretty strong argument.
You could certainly argue that's the case.
Yeah. Yes.
Now If I could, in 1955, I think what the government was concerned about there was that they not be making the uniforms or not be making the copying machines. They'll go out and buy those from the private sector. I mean, we're not talking about federal employees putting out their sewing machines to whip up their uniforms.
No, but research and development is largely done by the private sector today, which is absolutely critical to our weapon systems, the development
and collecting
systems.
Receivables. I mean, every company does it. They collect receivables.
Well, let's take a step back when we come back from the break and talk about that idea in our in-depth conversation, who will do it, defining inherently governmental, on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation continues in a moment.
Ladies Ladies and gentlemen, your government is looking for brave people willing to step up and transform government empowered by technology. Will you help your agency be more productive? Will you be ready to virtualize data centers and maximize efficiency within your government agency? Do you have what it takes to get compliant with the U.S. government configuration baseline initiative focusing on security? Heroes are wanted. Microsoft has the tools to help you be that hero. Go to Microsoft.com/govitHero to apply.
Scientist David Potocki of Berlin's Free University can turn the steering wheel of his car with just eye movements. He developed software called iDriver, and he's driving it around Berlin just by looking in different directions. iDriver lets you drive the car up to 31 miles an hour. It remains unclear whether this will be commercialized. This is the bad idea.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The staff and residents of Brook Grove Retirement Village remind everyone this summer season to visit a senior citizen to make sure their air conditioning and fans are in proper working order and that they have what they need to be comfortable. This important reminder brought to you by Brook Grove Retirement Village, where the staff is totally dedicated to the safety of seniors. For information, call 301-924-2811. That's 301-924-2811 for Brook Grove Retirement Village, reminding you that no one wants to grow old alone.
20,000 feet over Kandahar, fuel running low, ground troops need air support. The solution? EABS North America's KC-45 aerial refueling tanker. Offering the most range, fuel, and payload, it's the only tanker in the Air Force competition that's flying now when our troops need it. EABS North America will put 48,000 Americans to work building the KC-45 in the U.S. Proven capability, ready now. EABS North America's KC-45. See it at kc45now.com.
Paid for by EADS North America.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider.
Randy Height, Director of Information Technology Architecture and Systems Issues at GAO. They've updated the Enterprise Architecture Management Maturity Framework.
What it provides are those constructs around those capabilities that need to be in place in order to progress toward the point where you can actually have usable, valuable artifacts that the organization can use and get results from.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Dorabeck. Dorabeck Insider.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Al Berman of Jefferson Solutions, Angela Stiles of Crowell & Mooring, and Barbara Atkin of the National Treasury Employees Union. Our conversation topic is Who Will Do It? Defining Inherently Governmental. Barbara, are there areas that you think are genuinely should be open for business where competing, either federal employees competing with the private sector or recognizing that some things are better done or more effectively done, more cost effectively done, whatever, by the private sector? Or are we looking at a situation where pretty much everything the government does should be brought in-house, do you think?
I think the starting point is to define what it is Congress wants the government to do. I believe Angela mentioned that earlier, and Congress decided there that the baggage screeners, transportation security officers, should be doing the work of the government. So Congress makes the policy decision of what the government, what they want the government to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you define as is the work of the federal employee everything that is related to that mission, whether you want to call it inherently governmental or closely associated with inherently governmental, or the new phrase that's being tossed around, critical.
Mm-hmm.
Critical to the mission of the agency. All three of those, we believe, should be done by federal employees because that is basically the work of the government. Now, what is left, when you take out those three, you have what could be commercial functions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to define in the abstract what is always a commercial function. I believe that commonly they refer to the ministerial functions such as running the government cafeteria or the motor vehicle carpool. Those are called sort of the ministerial functions, which are commonly found to be not inherently governmental. But one example that is often put in that category is providing building security. And there, I think there's been a recent public debate: to what extent is security a commercial function? And I believe that there's been a lot of talk about that, one way or the other. Security in buildings, security of our protecting our troops.
If you have ever printed the test sheet on a black and white printer, there's that range of, it goes from white to black with grayscale in between, and it looks like a rainbow. And I have this vision of in my head of all of us sitting down with a huge one of those and trying to put each one of these individual jobs somewhere, with one end being contractable and one end being absolutely always governmental. And Angela, you're shaking your head like I've got the discussion.
It's way too restrictive. So let's say you're a federal employee and you've gotten money to research cold fusion. And if you're told by Congress that federal employees have to do that research because they made that decision, or you put it on your spectrum, you said, yep, this is inherently governmental. Well, you may absolutely be missing out on the best cold fusion research that the world has to offer at some university or at some private company. Mm-hmm. So you really hamstring yourself by putting things into particular categories.
Are we thinking about this the right way, Al, do you think?
I think so. I think we're putting it in a framework that says, when does the government really need to do it? Because you're concerned that there's going to be a result that otherwise wouldn't be a good result. Mm-hmm. The private sector bias of some kind is going to give you something that you don't want, or that you're not looking for. And so trying to put it in that perspective, I agree with the point that Barbara made about looking also at critical as an area that's perhaps more helpful in some respects, because it gets you away from the legal notions of what's governmental and what isn't governmental toward what's important for the agency to do to maintain its competence and to ensure that it really is in control of what it's doing. And in my view, I think shifting to that notion offers a lot more opportunity for making these kinds of choices.
All right, we're almost at the end of our time, and I want to give each of you a chance to give us some takeaways when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Barbara Atkin of the National Treasury Employees Union, Angela Stiles of Crowell and Mooring, and Al Berman of Jefferson Solutions will wrap it up when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You're an agent of change, making changes for the better in the face of shrinking budgets and expanding expectations. Amplify your agency's possibilities with unified communication solutions from Verizon that enable you to securely and reliably work where you work best, at a kitchen table or an office abroad. Change your team into a dynamic, interactive 24/7 think tank with our collaboration solutions and BlackBerry Bold smartphones, and transform smaller budgets into bigger successes. So while demands are rising and funds are declining, you can address both with powerful, global mobile voice and data solutions from Verizon. Find out how you can make your teams even more powerful and effective at verizonwireless.com/gov or by calling 1-800-293-3048. Verizon. Rule the air.
Have you delayed putting together an estate plan? Your retirement savings, insurance policies, and real estate are all part of your assets. If you or your partner should ever become incapacitated, who will handle the financial or medical decisions? And how do you want those assets distributed? Hi, I'm Wayne Zell of Zell Law and host of Blueprint for Wealth Saturdays at 10 a.m. Find out how you can better secure your future this Saturday or call me at Zell Law at 571-203-9355 or visit us on the web at zelllaw.com.
Inside Cybersecurity, brought to you by CA Technologies.
The cyber threat landscape has changed dramatically in recent years. Experts believe more threats than ever are not coming from other countries or malicious hackers, but from within the network. Insiders are targeting networks to intercept information or disrupt operations. Khalid Kark of Forrester Research says agencies have to manage people, the process, and technological controls. Continuous monitoring is the new buzzword. I'm Amy Morris.
How do you keep your infrastructure safe without limiting your people and limiting your productivity?
CA Technologies lets you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your system. Can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you enforce defense in detail, not just defense in depth? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems? With CA Technologies, you can. To learn how, visit ca.com/gov/value.
Hey Ravens fans, join your friends and fellow fans and paint the town purple this season. Celebrate Purple Fridays each week by wearing your best purple jersey, shirt, or accessory to school, work, or play. For happy hour, head to your favorite Bill Bateman's Bistro for appearances from the cheerleaders and Jim Beam drink specials. Find the schedule on BaltimoreRavens.com, show your team spirit, and get your purple on.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests for the hour are talking about the concept of inherently governmental. Barbara Atkin of the National Treasury Employees Union, Angela Stiles of Crowell and Mooring, and Al Berman of Jefferson Solutions. Barbara, what should we take away from this conversation above all else?
I think it's really essential that your listeners, understand that federal contract spending has exploded from $207 billion in the year 2000 to $400 billion in 2008. And there are more than 7 million contractors, which is about four times the size of the full-time federal workforce. So what they have to know is that there's this enormous shadow government that is not subject to the same laws and protections as the federal employees are, and that federal employees can do the work more cheaply, more effectively, with greater oversight than the contractors can.
All right. Angela, what should we take away from this conversation, or what should we keep in mind as this develops over the next 6 months to a year?
I think we really have to keep in mind the first fundamental question. Don't just jump to, is it inherently governmental and who should do it? You have to ask the first question, is this something we all agree the federal government should be spending money on,
mm-hmm.
whether it's government employees doing it or the private sector employees doing it? Once you address that question, then you go to the next one and you say, you know, what's the right mix to perform this well and inexpensively?
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, it's going to be a mix of federal employees and contractor employees. That's really the way you see things working the best in the federal government now. How you do that, how you manage it, and how you do it well for the taxpayer dollars is really what people should be looking at instead of arguing over what's inherently governmental and not.
Okay, to your first point, though, doesn't the fact that president requests something in a budget, Congress appropriates for it, and then the president signs the budget bill indicate that the policy decision's been made and that they want the government to do it?
Well, I think people should ask more questions. If you're getting funding to research, you know, mole rats and their habitats, I think you should be asking a question, is that something we really want to spend money on, before we ask the question of should it be a government employee or should it be a civilian?
Fair enough.
Al, and just on that point, Francis, if the Congress says we should be buying Joint Strike Fighters,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't necessarily mean they want the government to build those Joint Strike Fighters. They mm-hmm. want the government to buy them, to oversee them, to see that they have a good contract, to see that they get a good result. But these are critical to our national defense, but they're done by private contractors.
What else should we be watching? The memo that we've alluded to, that, as you said, is sitting, waiting to be released at OFPP, should be coming hopefully sometime soon. What should we be watching there?
And that memo is interestingly titled Work Reserved for Performance by Federal Employees, Not Inherently Governmental Functions, because, again, the notion is let's look at and see what kinds of things agencies need to do to maintain control of their operations. And it's been out for comment now. Comments were due the end of May. Comments are in, so I know that the Office of Management and Budget is reviewing what's come in,
mm-hmm.
and I know Barbara has her comments in and would like to see a particular result, but there are lots of other folks who do as well,
mm-hmm.
and I expect we'll see something in the next couple of months. It'll help better to define that.
I would love to follow up with each of you, either together again or individually, when the final product is released, to see what you think and to see where you think we might go from there, if we could do that.
Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you.
I love the head shakes and affirmation there. I do appreciate all of your time being here today. I know it's something to cut this time out of the middle of your day and come in and talk about this, and I'm grateful for your time to be here and to prepare to be here and talk about this issue. Thank you very much to all of my guests, Barbara Atkin, Deputy General Counsel of the National Treasury Employees Union, Al Berman, President of Jefferson Solutions and the former OFPP Administrator, and Angela Stiles, partner at Crowell & Mooring and the author of the A76 Circular from the Office of Management and Budget during the Bush administration. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of the program today, former Defense Secretary William Perry and the former National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley talking about the Quadrennial Defense Review. They are the co-chairs of the Quadrennial Defense Review Independent Panel, submitting a report to Congress and talking about that report before the Senate Armed Services Committee. You'll hear details on their view of the QDR and where the Department of Defense is headed over the next several years. That's hour number two of the program on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back shortly.